It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Steve Ducey.
I'm Sandra Smith.
I'm Jimmy Failla, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Monday, April 22nd, 2024. I'm Grinnell Scott. There are at least two sides to every issue. How and to what extent we make our points on each side can define a protest. But can that be taken too far?
When you're doing things that are aggressive or you're not articulate or you're turning people off, you're being rude, you're disrupting roadways, that isn't necessarily going to bring people onto your team.
This is the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
Jason in the House, the Jason Chaffetz Podcast. Dive deeper than the headlines and the party lines as I take on American life, politics, and entertainment. Subscribe now on foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Many things divide us ideologically, from what's taught in our children's schools, to who we're supporting in the next election, to where one nation's border ends and another begins. All of those issues and many more have brought people face to face, to paraphrase what someone said once in a movie, to engage someone who's standing center stage and advocating at the top of their lungs that which you would spend a lifetime opposing at the top of yours. That is a recipe for many protests we see in America and around the world. But when do those protests go too far? When is the response to that free speech right disproportionate? There is a group called Crowds on Demand that tries to navigate that discourse and keep it as civil as humanly possible.
In cases of very well talked about issues such as Israel, such as national political issues, it's not difficult necessarily to find people who have a position. The harder part is to find really passionate, articulate advocates who are going to do justice to the position.
Adam Swart is the founder and CEO of Crowds on Demand.
We have two criteria that we use when we're trying to get people for advocacy events, such as demonstrations and protests. Number one, you believe strongly in the cause that you're espousing. We don't want to pay people to change their beliefs. We want to pay people to advocate for their beliefs. But number two, and this is the harder part, and this is probably why we're in business after 12 years, is finding good people, having quality advocates who actually do justice to what the issue is trying to get across, who present the issue in the most positive, beneficial light, and hopefully can convince others to join the movement. We're in such a polarized time right now where you have one side yelling at the other side, but you have very little effort, or at least not enough effort, into actually bringing in the middle and trying to get people who might not know about an issue or might be on defense about an issue to be on your side. So when you're doing things that are aggressive or you're not articulate or you're turning people off, you're being rude, you're disrupting roadways, that isn't necessarily going to bring people onto your team.
Let's talk about the situation that many people who have been watching their TVs and listening to news have been seeing recently, and that's Columbia University in New York and the demonstrations that have gone on for several days now there. At that point, where you see a protest like that going on, or you're part of a protest or part of organizing a protest that is going on in a college campus setting like that, are there certain rules of the road you have to follow? How does that take shape?
Well, it's important to notice that there's a distinction between what are technically the rules and what are rules that are enforced. So when it comes to technically the rules, there are a whole lot of technical rules, and many protests may well violate them. For example, amplified sound. If you're using even drums or a megaphone without a permit in many cities, that is technically against local ordinances. Now, will the police come arrest you for that? Very unlikely. Then you come into when you're talking about the student activists around the Palestine issue, you have a lot of things that are taking it another degree. You're blocking roadways, you're blocking bridges, you're blocking airports. That is a whole different ballpark because you are actually disrupting. If a hacker were to have the same effect, do this something that blocked the Bay Bridge in San Francisco for some reason, they could face decades in prison for that. So the effect of that is very different from creating an annoyance. So I think it's very important to note, though, that there's a difference between what may technically be illegal and what is actually enforced. And that's actually at the root of some of the problems that you're seeing with these demonstrators as well.
When we talk about demonstrations, and there is, I won't say a fine line, but there is a line where protests can become destructive and they can cause harm, cause injury, and people start throwing around terms like domestic terrorism and things like that. Where is that line drawn? Because there is that certain element of safety, that certain element of respect of property that has to come. Even in getting your point across, there has to be that respect of people and property that I guess can win out as you're trying to make those points in any particular situation.
I agree. I think that's a major challenge that these demonstrators are going to have. But in terms of where the line is drawn, that depends on who the prosecutor is. So in November of 2023, demonstrators in the San Francisco area blocked off the Bay Bridge for hours. And the penalty they got was 5 hours, not even a full day, 5 hours of community service, plus a $4,500 fine, no criminal record. Conversely, in Atlanta, there were protesters that were attempting to disrupt the construction of a police training facility, and the Georgia attorney general, a Republican, charged them with domestic terrorism. So you have two groups of protesters that are both clearly breaking the law. One of them, one group, gets charged with minor offenses, no criminal record, and a few hours of half day of community service. The other is potentially facing over 10 years in prison. Now, in my personal view, I think the San Francisco district attorney, Brooke Jenkins, is going way too soft. And the Georgia attorney general, Republican Christopher Carr, is going too hard. And there has to be a Goldilocks middle ground between domestic terrorism and treating it like a traffic ticket.
In New York City at Columbia University, the pictures that we saw of the response from the NYPD, we saw a lot of riot gear. We saw a lot of cops and shields and with their weapons drawn. How does that response sit in your mind against students at Columbia University who want their voices heard?
Well, number one, I think the students, regardless of their opinions and regardless of what you think about it, need and deserve to be heard. And it's very important to create a distinction between this is a point of view that some might find offensive, such as from the river to the sea, and actions that are violent. Now, I think the challenge at Columbia is you essentially have two different groups. You could probably separate it even further, but you have students that may have an ideology that is disagreeable, but aren't violent. They might be chanting offensive slogans, but effectively the riot gear is overkill for that, for sure. However, you have other people who insert themselves, and it's important to keep in mind they insert themselves into right wing, they insert themselves into left wing. These are what I would call professional anarchists. They infiltrate wherever they see chaos And they are often the ones who will throw the Molotov cocktail. They'll throw stones. They're actually trying to instigate chaos for whatever their ends are. So I think on the one hand, the optics of it don't look so good for the NYPD because it looks like they're dressed in riot gear for students. And I also think the other challenge when they dress in riot gear is I think it sets up a more confrontational atmosphere, because now the students are saying, okay, well, the cops are prepared for violence. So now how are we going to respond to that? We're going to be more aggressive in our slogans. It's not necessarily a calming effect. So sometimes when the police come in and say, and I've been doing this for years, the best times is when the police come in and say, we want you to have your voices heard. Let's talk. But one of the challenges are that some of the organizers of these Palestine marches are directly saying, do not liaise with the police. Don't talk to them. We want to catch them off guard. So I definitely understand both perspectives here.
We're talking with Adam Swart of Crowds on Demand. More of our conversation in just a moment.
A couple of other quick things, especially in this Israel-Hamas conflict. Is there a particular side you fall on, or how do you decide which side is the side that you will gather your people for?
That's a very good question. I've been reluctant to wade in myself to the Israel-Palestine issue. We have gotten tons of interest from people on both sides wanting us to get involved on the issue and trying to make us offers, including many lucrative ones, to get involved. I find it a very contentious issue, and it's a no-win issue. When I evaluate projects to take on as Crowds on Demand, I am trying to evaluate where we can make a difference. Number one, where we can make a positive change and where we can be effective. The challenge with the Israel-Palestine issue is it doesn't feel like anyone is convincing anyone. It feels like two sides are yelling at each other and nothing is actually advancing. And when it comes more broadly to what issues that we take on, it depends. We will never take two sides of the same exact issue. For example, we would never take the side of management and then the union in the same labor dispute. However, we might work for management on one dispute and labor on a totally separate dispute in a separate company. So we have basic conflicts of interest protections, even though we're not legally obliged to do that.
But I do remember you saying earlier, but there is that need to find that Goldilocks, and I believe that was your word, middle ground in there. In a situation like that, where it's such a contentious issue, whether it be management versus labor, Israel versus Hamas, do you try to find that middle ground?
Well, yes. I mean, in my own personal perspective, I have strong personal views on there, and I would definitely characterize them more in the middle on that issue. I could give advice to both movements in terms of what they could be doing differently. I think that on the pro-Israel side, this jump to defend Netanyahu, who ultimately failed in preventing the attack and ultimately failed in his dealings with Hamas because he underestimated the threat of Hamas. He was actually working to build up Hamas to delegitimize the Palestinian Authority, right? So the fact that on one side, you have one group who's really defending Netanyahu too much, and you have the pro-Palestine side that I think is completely misguided from the river to the sea, because they're alienating a lot of moderate voices who want a two-state solution, who don't agree with what Israel is doing in Gaza. But when you say Israel doesn't have the right to exist, you're essentially alienating a ton of people in the middle and making it impossible to have a reasonable dialogue. And I think the challenge you asked about Colombia is to return to the issue of the Colombia students. I just feel like a lot of the students are seeing things through a American, you know, critical race theory lens of they're seeing Israel as oppressors, Palestinians as oppressed, when the reality is this is a far more complicated issue than that. And to try to reduce it, especially as Ivy League students who should understand nuance, is a little bit dispiriting.
Last thing I'll ask you, and I'll give you about a minute if you can respond in that. If you were to teach that class on what are the proper methods to protest as you organize protests, what would you tell somebody who, if you want to have an effective protest, what's the first thing you need to do? What's the second thing you need to do?
The number one thing that protesters have to do is have a clear goal in mind. They have to have a clear understanding of what they're doing and who they are trying to persuade. So if you're talking about any kind of movement and you don't have that goal, so let's take a look at and dissect one of the most effective movements of all time, which is the civil rights movement. Dr. King had a very clear goal in mind. He understood that in order to succeed as a civil rights movement, they had to bring white moderates into the mix. They needed to bring them into the fold in their camp. So Dr. King actually resisted movements that were ideas that were overly disruptive because he felt, even while they might be morally justified, that they would turn those people off, right? So I think number one is to understand who you're reaching and to gear your tactics towards them and understand that you have to persuade them. And obviously, you have to understand who your media partners are, who's going to cover you favorably, who's going to cover you unfavorably, how to use the unfavorable coverage to your advantage. And then also make sure that the people in your movement are reflecting well on your movement. When you have the people at Columbia saying, "We are Hamas," that doesn't do a very good job of evangelizing the pro-Palestine movement. You'd be much better off focusing on the impact that the Israeli bombing has had on young children. When you say, "We are Hamas," and we all know what the horrors that Hamas have done, how do you think the people you're trying to persuade are going to react to that?
Whether it's civil rights or international conflict or even American politics, we see a lot of protests. There are rules of the road, and we will watch as each side has their say as all of these situations develop. Adam Swart is the founder and CEO of Crowds on Demand. Thank you so much for joining us on the Fox News Rundown Evening Edition.
It's my pleasure.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.